once again, I appreciate the opportunity to get up in front of you all and speak. It's a great pleasure to me. I always enjoy getting up and speaking. It helps me, number one, to go through and do some studying myself so that I actually feel like I know what I'm talking about when I get up here. But also, it helps me on several different levels. I have to do a lot of public speaking for my new job with a lot of different people. So it actually, that helps me there, and doing that there helps me here too. So it's nice. It's nice. I don't really ever feel uncomfortable getting up in front of you guys. So that's a compliment, I guess. But what I want to talk about tonight is examples. People that we look to that are examples to us today. All too often, we look at the wrong figure as an example. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with at all me looking at a coworker or my boss and having some admiration for that individual, thinking, you know what, that guy's got it together. He really does. He manages his home well. He manages his work well. You know, the things that he deals with at home, he doesn't bring them to work, and he doesn't take work with him home. He manages his money well. He deals well with others. He's a nice guy. Those are all qualities that I appreciate. I think that's fantastic. However, we can look at people too highly. We can esteem them too highly. And I'll tell you, I've got one great example of that happening to me as a kid. Is I was in a Bible class, I believe it was on a Wednesday night. Yeah, it was on a Wednesday night. Came back out, we're driving home. Dad, Mom, Dad, Sarah, and I, we're driving home. And I got to talking to them. They're like, well, what'd you learn in class tonight? You know, that's what parents always do with their kids. What'd you learn in class today? What'd you learn in school today? So, you know, they're running me through the mill. And I said, well, I learned this, and I don't remember what exact, it's, you know, I don't remember things like that. I've got principles ground into my head, but whenever somebody tells me something that's not right, I don't always absolutely remember everything that they've said. Well, I repeated what was told to me in class, and Dad just kind of stopped, looked back at me. He's like, is that so? So then we talked a little bit more, and come to find out, as far as he was concerned, what I had been told in there was wrong. It was wrong. And as a kid, I had a lot of admiration for the individuals teaching the class. I could not believe that he had told me something that was wrong. It just shocked me. I mean, all night long, that really bothered me. And from that point on, I had a different view of that individual. Probably not fair to him. But for me, it was earth-shattering. Because as a kid, I could not believe that a grown adult who was a Christian in the same church I was going to, same congregation, sorry, that I was going to, or attending, would tell me something that wasn't right. But it happens. People have their own opinions. We can't look at a non-perfect or an unperfect example and try and pattern our life after that. That's my whole point. Beloved, those who serve, follow, and worship men have a flawed leader. All right, so you've got cults or any denomination, or even the Catholic Church that follow one man. I don't care how wonderful that individual is, how nice he is, how many good deeds he does. Somewhere in his life, just like we talked about this morning, that man, that individual is going to sin. Like David talked about, I've been confronted with that as well from different, believe it or not, from different Christians in this area, that churches down south, that would say, well, you know what, Wes, from this point on, you can live a sinless life. You can. It's physically possible. You can do it. You know, okay, take me there. Show me. People, even though we have, and these are individuals that I have a lot of respect for, that my family has known for a long time. It's a scary thing. But that's why we can't place too much faith in certain individuals. However, Jesus Christ is sinless. Coupled to Jesus is sinless, the manner of his deity, and you have one worthy man to admire. All right? Christ came down as a God, the God, came down and took the form of a man, of a physical being, lived his life from start to finish perfectly. No sin whatsoever. So if you want an example, there's the one to follow right there. One of the excerpts that I brought up from this is an old, as a matter of fact, I'll tell you how old this is. It's a book, actually, that came out, but it was The Gospel Advocate, December 26, 1940. I don't know if anybody here has heard of A.C. Dryden, but this is a quote from that book. It says, "The Bible is a book of examples. It records the lives of weak and wicked men to teach us what not to be. The lives and deeds of great and good men are left to show us how to live and what to be. The power of an example is a very great for good or for evil. It is said that 75% of what we learn and do is a result of what we see in other people. Our influence radiates in what we say, what we do, and what we are. Men is prone to follow. Man is prone to follow a bad example as well as a good one, to copy defects as well as virtues. But one thing is certain, he will follow some example." There are examples all around us, all right? And granted, it's easy to follow physical examples. Why is that? The reason is that's what we're surrounded by. We are surrounded by coworkers. We're surrounded by people. We're surrounded by family members that don't necessarily want to do the right thing, that don't have the motivations that we have. That's why, even if you love them as much as you physically can on this earth, they may be very dear to you. That doesn't mean that they have your best interest at heart. They may lead you astray in some manner or another. Jesus, then, is our perfect exemplar in all matters and one whom we are to mimic. Turn to Hebrews, the 12th chapter, if you would. Verses 1 through 3, "Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us also lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which also entangles us, easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart." It's a privilege to submit to one, to such a one as who has all authority in heaven and on earth, the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, as this talked about in Matthew, the 28th chapter. We should count it a privilege to serve under him. You know, I'll tell you guys right now, this new master sergeant that we've got in my shop, I can't stand the guy. Okay, have you guys ever been in a work situation where somebody who has some authority for whatever reason gets put there and knows absolutely nothing about what he's doing? That drives me insane. It drives me crazy. Well, this is one thing right here. Well, we can absolutely know and trust and be positively sure that Christ knows exactly what he's doing. Not only is he the author, he came down here and he lived it. He came down here, he lived just like we do, in a physical form, and did it perfectly. So we know this guy knows what he's talking about. He's been there, he's done that, as we say. We need to focus on Jesus. We must look unto Jesus. Our focus must be upon the Lord as we run the race, as it talked about there in Hebrews. We might glance at others. All right, that's okay. You look at somebody like I was talking about earlier, someone that you see as an admirable individual. You know, you look at them and you say, that guy or that gal's got it together. They're good people. We can glance at them and glean something from those individuals, but we're to gaze upon the Lord. And when I mean glance at somebody, it's a quick once over. When you gaze at something, you're fixed on it. All right, you're fixed on it. As suggested by the formula for spiritual success. I don't know if any of you guys have ever heard this or not, but just like in, you know, how man likes to tie things into things that we understand, we comprehend, you know, mathematical equations and such. But this is pretty neat. This is pretty neat. If you want to be distressed, look within. If you want to be defeated, look back. If you want to be distracted, look around. If you want to be dismayed, look ahead. If you want to be delivered, look up. Turn to Colossians, the third chapter. Colossians, the third chapter, verses 1 and 2. Therefore, if you have been raised up with Christ, keep seeking the things above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above, not on things that are on this earth. Christ is the author of our faith. Turn to Hebrews. Turn back to Hebrews, the second chapter. Hebrews 2 and verse 10. For it was fitting for him, for whom all are all things, and through him, or through whom are all things, in bringing many sons to glory, to perfect the author of their salvation through sufferings. Jesus was the trailblazer. He pioneered this for us by having run the race himself. Verses 14 through 18. Therefore, since the children share in flesh and blood, he himself likewise also partook of the same, that through death he might render powerless him who had power of death, that is, the devil, and might free those who through fear of death were subject to slavery all their lives. For assuredly he does not give help to angels, but he gives help to the descendant of Abraham. Therefore he had to be made like his brethren in all things, so that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in things pertaining to God, to make propitiation for sins of the people. For since he himself was tempted in that which he has suffered, he is able to come to the aid of those who are tempted. Now, that's an example right there. I don't know about you guys, but as far as I'm concerned, when I have somebody, I always go back to business because that's my life away from anything else is a business aspect. Would you have someone? One of the neat things about Allied Waste, the company I work for now, is that the corporate, they build strategies, they do certain things, they make the mandates, this is what you guys are going to do. We don't care how you accomplish it, but this is what we want you to accomplish. Okay, they set goals, they set policies and things like that. They leave the management up to the local areas. Makes sense, right? Makes sense. They're not going to have a clue from Scottsdale, Arizona, how to run Kansas City because it's a whole different area. It's a whole different set of circumstances, all right? Christ came down on this earth. He lived this life, and he did it sinlessly. He did it perfectly, something that none of us will ever do. Not even from this point on, as some would say, you can live the rest of your life sinlessly. Well, you can try. You can try. All right? But he came down. He came down to this area. He knows exactly what we're going to go through, what we have gone through, what we're currently going through. Just like Solomon said, there's nothing new under the sun. There's nothing new. There's not going to be any new temptations. There's not going to be anything, well, Christ never had to deal with Y2K. Come on, people. It's a same set of stressors, just a different face. That's what it is. That's all it is. But he came down, he lived the perfect example. It's recorded for us right here. This is what you do in this situation. Sure, it may be a little bit different. It was Jews and Gentiles and Romans and Greeks back then. But it's the same principle behind that we can live our lives by. He's the perfecter of our faith. He has perfected the way of faith since he reached its end successfully, as it talked about there in verse 14 through 16. As a forerunner, he has entertained that the heavenly sanctuary. Chapter 6, verse 19 and 20. This hope we have as an anchor of the soul, a hope both sure and steadfast, and one which enters within the veil, where Jesus has entered as a forerunner for us, having become a high priest forever, according to the order of Melchizedek. By living it by a new and living way, which he consecrated for us through the veil that is his flesh, he provided us a way to succeed. Okay, turn to 2 Peter, the first chapter. 2 Peter, first chapter and verse 3. Second Peter chapter 1 and 3. Seeing that his divine power has granted to us everything pertaining to life and godliness through the truth, through true knowledge of him who called us by his own glory and excellence. He endured hostility from sinners against himself, not only on the cross, but even before. Turn back to Luke, the fourth chapter. Luke chapter 4, verses 28 and 29. And all the people in the synagogue were filled with rage as they heard these things. They got up and drove him out of the city and led him to the brow of the hill on which their city had been built in order to throw him down the cliff. How many of us have ever had to go through anything like that? I mean, it's one thing to be laughed out of somewhere because you did something silly or stupid. And, you know, you get embarrassed. It's like, you know, and you feel bad. You feel like, man, that was really dumb. But to be teaching something and to know yourself that the only way these people in here tonight are going to be saved is through me. To know that and to try and tell these people this and then to get driven not only out of the building, not out of the neighborhood, but out of the city. To get driven out of the city and then be threatened that you're going to get thrown off of a cliff. how many of us are ever going to have to deal with that in our lives? All right, he suffered for us. Not only this, he perfected the faith. He showed us an example of love, an example of commitment through this. He also shows us here how to deal with stressors like that. Not that any of us are going to be, more than likely, in our time, are we ever going to be physically assaulted for what we believe? I guess it's becoming more and more possible, but not probable. Jesus is our example and we're to follow in his footsteps, even in suffering. Turn to 1 Peter. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 21. For you have been called for this purpose, since Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example for you to follow in his steps. So there's going to be some suffering. We're not only warned, we're told here, there's going to be some sufferings you're expected to go through because of who you serve. He himself, and the thought just came in my head, so I don't have the verse right here. But the principle is set forth for us in the Bible also. And David, you might come up with this off the top of your head. But if they treated our master this way, they treated the master, how can we expect to be treated any better? You can't. If they're going to treat him that way, the people that follow him, they're going to get treated the same way, if not worse. We have to be ready for that. We have to be ready for our faith to be tested. Discouragement. Jesus obviously faced a lot of trials that we will never have to face, certainly. Now, can you say he was discouraged? I don't think he was ever discouraged. I think maybe he was tried, but I don't think ever that his focus faltered, not once. And to say such, as far as I'm concerned, would probably be blasphemy. He knew what he had to do. He knew exactly what he had to do. He was focused in that. turn to Romans, the 5th chapter. Romans, the 5th chapter, verses 1 through 11. Therefore, having been justified by faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom we have obtained our introduction by faith into this grace in which we stand, and we exult in hope of the glory of God. And not by this, but we also exult in our tribulations, knowing that tribulation brings about perseverance, and perseverance proven character, and proven character hope. And hope does not disappoint, because the love of God has been poured out within our hearts through the Holy Spirit who was given to us. For while we were still helpless, at the right time Christ died for the ungodly. For one will hardly die for a righteous man, though perhaps for the good man someone would dare even to die. But God demonstrates His own love towards us, in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Much more then, having now been justified by His blood, we shall be saved from the wrath of God through Him. For if while we were enemies, we were reconciled to God through the death of His Son, much more, having been reconciled, we shall be saved by His life. And not only this, but we also exult in God through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom we have now received the reconciliation. There's our hope right there. There's our hope right there. Christ suffered, we're going to suffer, all right? He gave us this example. He lived this life. His life was recorded for us for that reason. To know how to deal with things in our life. Just like the author, this A.C. Dryden, that quote I read earlier, just like he said, the Bible's full of examples on how to live and how not to live. Even though we have these stressors, even though we have these afflictions in our life, we know because of what Christ did for us, we should be happy. Even in tribulations, we should be happy because of the hope that we have that if He didn't come down and do this, every last one of us would have been condemned. Every last one of us, because none of us can live a perfect life. We cannot live a sinless life as Christ did. Turn to Isaiah, the 40th chapter. Isaiah, the 40th chapter, verse 31. But those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. When we put our hope, our faith and our trust in the Lord, the things in this life, they seem menial. They seem silly when we sit back and take a look at the big picture. In conclusion tonight, and I know this is, especially for me, it's a relatively short lesson, but I wanted to keep it that way. As we look at Christ's life, the example that He's left for us, we need to keep in mind, He lived a perfect example. This is recorded for us. All the tribulations, all the trials that He went through are recorded for us. We can, anytime we're having a tough day, a tough week, a tough month, whatever the case is, we can go and look at teaching someone, trying to teach somebody something, gets thrown back in your face, and then you get driven out of the city to be thrown off of a cliff. You know, somebody calling you a name at work or a boss putting their thumb down on you doesn't seem like such a big deal anymore. We also need to remember the hope that we should have because of what Christ has done. He came down. He lived a perfect life. He gave us the example recorded here in the perfect word for us to follow. And that hope should grow stronger every day. As we know, we're getting closer to the end of our life. Our hope should be getting stronger every day. One last thing I want to leave everyone with tonight. I don't know, maybe I've brought this up before. But they have what they call different schools of business will teach different things, obviously, but they have what they call the 80-15-5. I don't know if anybody's heard of this or not. In manufacturing or in different types of businesses, they recognize certain things. Obviously, sometimes as individuals, we don't even recognize that we should. But basically, what the 80-15-5 is talking about is 80% of the time, you have no control over anything at all. Whether that be what foreign governments are doing or what the weather's doing today, you don't have any control over that. 15% of the time in your life, you have a moderate amount of control. Something that, let's say, Davina makes a decision on something or is about to make a decision on something. Say she's wanting to go out and buy a car. Well, if it's her money and she's the one that's going to do it, obviously it's going to be her decision, but I have some say in that since I'm her husband, right? Or should, at least. That's at 15% of the time. 5% of the time in our lives, in our lives collectively, we have complete control. How many times throughout a day, throughout a month, throughout a year, throughout your life, do you spend too much time worrying about that 80% that's out there, outside of your control? We spend so much time worrying about that stuff that we don't focus on that 15 and that 5, that 20% of our lives that we have some or all control of. So keep that in mind. As you remember Christ's example, he knew there were going to be people that he's going to be able to reach, and there were people that he wasn't. He knew there were trials that he was going to have to go through. There's trials we're going to have to go through. We need to remember that. As always, the invitation's offered. Anyone that needs a prayer as the congregation for strength, whether that be spiritually or physically, would ask that you come forward. And if there's anyone else that needs to be baptized this evening, we can accommodate that as well. So if you would all stand forward, come forward as we stand and sing.